$680 million poured into precision ag last year. Autonomous weeding robots dominated, and John Deere made two acquisitions in 3 months. A food company, not an equipment maker, bought a robotics startup to protect its own supply chain. The deals are accelerating, the money is moving, and the winners are already separating from the pack. If you're investing, building, or buying in this space, you need the full picture before your competitors get it. The 2025 Precision Agriculture Intelligence Report from iGrowNews is now available. Get your copy today at igrownews.com/precision. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Arnois Greenhouses. Are you a commercial grower striving for consistency, higher yields, and year-round profitability? For over 60 years, Arnois Greenhouses has been designing, building, and installing advanced greenhouse and high tunnel systems across North America. Their commercial structures are engineered to maximize light with minimal steel, using their exclusive oval tube design, improve climate control, and reduce disease risks, helping growers achieve healthier crops, better yields, and consistent performance season after season. What sets them apart? Arnois combines deep engineering expertise with a personalized grower-first approach. With tens of thousands of installations worldwide, patented technologies, and a legacy of innovation, they're not just building greenhouses, they're building the future of agriculture. If you want a greenhouse manufacturer that can truly be there, from your first high tunnel to a fully automated turnkey solution tailored to your climate, crops, and business goals, whether you grow vegetables, ornamentals, berries, or nursery plants, visit arnoisgreenhouse.com. Let them help you bring predictability, efficiency, and scalability to your growing operation. Thanks to Arnois Greenhouses for supporting this show. Now let's get into today's episode.
One of the things that we grow year-round is actually celery. So I think we're going into the third or fourth year of growing celery nonstop year-round. So a lot of people, you know, we kind of become known as the, you know, celery people at market. You know, we've always got it.
Welcome to Greenhouse Success Stories. Tune in every week as we share conversations with growers, operators, and innovators from around the world, providing insight into what's working in their greenhouses. We discuss firsthand experiences and provide insights into how these farms are succeeding and thriving. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Arnois Greenhouse, with your host, founder of Little Greenhouse That Could, Trina Semenchuk.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Greenhouse Success Stories. Looking forward to this interview. We have Andrew Phelps here. Andrew and his wife, Amy Phelps, are the owner of Phelps Farms in Gunnberg, Iowa. So thank you so much for joining us, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So just give us maybe a little bit of background for anyone listening in right now. Can you tell us about your story, how you got into the greenhouse industry? You know, how did you start? Kind of those details.
Yeah. So my wife and I purchased our farmland in 2019. It was originally part of my wife's family home farm. She actually grew up right across the road. We have about 79 acres of land. We began vegetable farming in 2021. So originally, my background is in IT, and I was working at an IT data center.
Oh.
And my position and department were basically outsourced. So I had to, you know, figure out, you know, what I was going to do, you know, for income. So we decided to do something with our farmland. You know, we kind of toyed with a bunch of different ideas, you know, maybe renting it out. It was originally a row crop farm. So, you know, corn, soybeans, you know, stuff like that. I had the wise idea that I was going to be a pumpkin farmer. And after quite a bit of research and, you know, looking into it, you know, that's wasn't going to be feasible because it's income just like one time a year. And pumpkins are big and bulky and heavy and a lot of work. So we kind of went down the rabbit hole of we're going to grow vegetables and, you know, figure out how to sell them. We started doing the farmers markets. You know, it just kind of snowballed from that point on. Kind of going back to our farmland, we sectioned off 5 acres just for vegetable production. And then we have about 30 acres of woods and another about 40 acres of cattle pasture. My brother-in-law still lives across the road, and he runs a certified black Angus farm. So he rotationally grazes on our pastures throughout the year. So it's still kind of part of my wife's family. You know, it's still part of the home farm. So that's pretty cool.
But yeah, this is very interesting. Okay, so just so that I've got the timelines right in my head. So in 2019, you and your wife bought your wife's family home farm, which was 79 acres. And then in 2021, you started vegetable farming. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. Why pumpkin farming? Why did you want to do like Halloween? What?
Yeah, so I mean, I always liked growing pumpkins, and growing up, I always had pumpkins in my backyard, you know. So this is what I knew at the time, and I knew how to kind of grow pumpkins, and it was fun, and, you know, I enjoyed it. But when we started looking at, you know, profitability and, you know, the market, a lot of people grow pumpkins, and a lot of people bring pumpkins in from other places that, you know, they're acres and acres of, you know, fields. We thought about maybe doing like agritourism, you know, have people come out, you know, pick your pumpkins out in the field. But, you know, that didn't really sound too interesting to us. Mm. So
you just didn't want people in the farm, or you want to be more produce focused?
It's a lot of work. And, mm-hmm. and again, it kind of goes back to, you know, what are we going to do like in the springtime? You know, what can we grow? What other things can we do year round to, you know, generate income throughout the year, not just late summer, fall time frame? So we kind of went, you know, started looking at growing other things, and then we started doing, you know, figure out we could grow vegetables. Okay. So we, you know, kind of started there, you know, just small crops, and we started doing the farmer's market in town, and, you know, just kind of trying to figure out what people wanted, and, it just kept snowballing.
So had your wife been farming her whole life, it being her family farm, or what was her background?
Yeah, so she grew up on a farm, so they had cattle, they had hogs, they did row crops. She's familiar with farming, and they always had a very large garden. She did a lot of canning with her mom. Her mom was a home ec teacher for 40 years at the local school, so you know, they did a lot of canning and preserving. Mm-hmm. And so my wife actually, her background is actually nursing. She has her master's degree in nursing. So, and my background is IT. I have a bachelor's degree in computer network administration. So perfect for farming.
I find that so interesting. I have a lot of friends who are, you know, engineers. And they spend their days behind a computer and a screen. And, you know, some of them are happy. Some of them are not so happy. So I'm wondering, you know, with the IT life, like, why not get another IT job? Were you tired of being behind the desk? And did you want to be, you know, working with your hands more?
Yeah, in a sense, I'm a very hands-on person. I like being outside. I like doing things. And, you know, just sitting behind a computer screen all day, it just, I don't know.
It's so fucking.
Yeah. And, you know, I like, you know, doing things, you know, that you can actually, you know, be outside and, you know, enjoy the nice weather, you know, when it's nice out. And, you know, in IT, you can be in a little cubicle or behind a screen all day, and it's like beautiful 75 degree sunny day out, and everybody's having a good time on the weekend. It's like behind a screen. So, you know, that with farming, I can make my own schedules in a sense. You know, I can plan, you know, I can change my schedule as needed. If the kids have something going on or appointments, I can, you know, take care of it. So, you know, there's a lot more flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Where is Phelps Farm at today? And, you know, what are what are some things that you do different than other greenhouse growers? Like, how would you differentiate yourself?
So we are focused on growing year round. So our focus is continually going more and more towards that mindset that we, just because it gets cold outside doesn't mean we stop growing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of farmers in the area, you know, the farmers market, they kind of stop growing after a while, you know, when it starts getting cold.
Just a story, just out of curiosity, how cold does it get?
In the wintertime, I mean, it'll get down to, I think one winter we were 40 below zero, but that's pretty unusual for us. Mm-hmm. For the most part, in the wintertime, it gets down to the teens or 0 degrees at night, typically, and then, you know, during the teens during the day. So, I mean, it gets cold. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I'm from Winnipeg, so it's like minus 40 degrees in Celsius. In winter, but you know, zero is still that's still pretty chilly. I'm actually surprised that it gets that cold for you guys.
Yeah, so that's Fahrenheit.
Yeah. I know. I actually just pulled up my.
I'm not sure what it is in Celsius. I'm not used to. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we do get nights below zero too. So you know, it depends if you know we get a polar vortex coming down, you know, out of the north. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So yeah, we started off with Farmers Friends caterpillar tunnels. So those are 16 foot wide and 100 foot long. We start off with one, then we got another, and then we got another one after that. So we're up to three, and then we put up one more. So we have actually four. So we kind of discovered that we can grow a lot out of season or season extension, you know, for crops. So we just kind of kept buying these, and we still use them. And they've been great, but the problem I run into is that you have to manually open and close them on a sunny day. You know, if I'm at market on a Saturday and it's cold in the morning, I go to market and I come home and it's sunny and they're, you know, the temperature swings are quite extreme. So I've put vents in and tried putting fans in, and, you know, or if I go away for a conference or something for a day, I have to try to find somebody to come open and close them. And, you know, that's probably the biggest thing, you know, just the manual labor of that. But other than that, I mean, we can grow quite a bit. Right now, my Farmers Friend tunnels, I've got lettuce. I've got some broccoli going still. One of them I partially heat under a row cover. So I still have ginger, turmeric, Swiss chard. I still have some basil in the ground that still looks okay. So, you know, it's pretty late in the season for basil. Mm-hmm. A lot of herbs. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we still have going.
And this is in the caterpillar tunnels.
Yes. Yep. So our first year growing, we had a derecho come through and it took out two of our tunnels and damaged the other two. So we kind of discovered that from that point on, we needed something more robust. And, you know, we kind of started looking at greenhouses, and then we found the USDA, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, they offer EQIP grants. So I don't know how familiar you are with those, but they're grants that you can apply for and get funding for a variety of different things. So our cattle pasture, our cattle waters, that was a EQIP grant that we got. And then they have one for high tunnels. So we applied for a grant, and I think it was 2022. We put up our first Harnois greenhouse.
Nice.
So, yeah. And we discovered that everything just grows so much better in you know, a greenhouse, even compared to like a caterpillar tunnel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot better management of temperatures and humidity, you know, more growing space, obviously. So our high tunnels are 30 foot wide and 150 foot long.
Mm-hmm. And how many do you have?
So we're putting up numbers 3 and 4 right now. And then we're putting up a shorter one that's, I think it's 30 by 48, I think is the actual measurement. But that one will be a prop house. So we'll do our seed starting in there in the spring. And it'll just be for like a workspace. Mm. So the other thing with our high tunnels, we put automation in with them. So we use Orisha, which is based out of Canada, and they've been great to work with. The cool thing with that is I can get notifications on my phone when, you know, a temperature or anything is wrong or out of range. If I'm not at the farm and there's a bad storm coming, I can get on my phone and I can close the tunnels.
Oh, perfect. That's much better.
Yep. And it runs in my ventilation systems. They have options where you can have it do your watering, lighting control, all kinds of different things. So I'm kind of at the basic package, you know, just the automation and ventilation. Mm-hmm. And that's been great. You know, a lot of humidity control going on. So
So with two 35 foot by 100 foot long greenhouses, just so that I'm really, you know, mapping out the picture of where Phelps Farm is at today, is it just you and your wife running the greenhouse, or do you guys currently have staff?
I just have a couple part-time staff that work on weekends, but we are kind of looking for getting part-time people, maybe a full-time person during the week for next season. It would be really beneficial. So it'd save me a lot of time, you know, having to deal with trellising and harvesting and, you know, just having someone here to help me out. Cause I do this full time. So this past season I was pretty much by myself other than a couple hours on the weekend. So that was kind of challenging, you know, doing, you know, planting, harvesting, washing, packing for our CSA, but also for our weekend markets. So yeah, you know, if you know anybody, send them my way.
I'll send them from Winnipeg. No, if I know anyone, I will definitely send them your way. So would you be looking for, I guess, like an assistant grower with you and your wife still being the head grower, or would you want someone to be like a head grower?
You know, probably just, you know, assistant. You know, someone that can help us, you know, transplant stuff, flip beds, harvest, washing, packing, you know, trellising is the one big thing that, you know, we kind of lacked on this past year, trellising tomatoes and cucumbers. What else, you know, anything else that needs done. So, you know, having someone here to help me physically, you know, do stuff is very beneficial.
Definitely. So again, with kind of mapping out with where Phelps Farm is at, for all of your sales, are you going directly to the customers? So are you primarily still at, you know, farmers markets, CSA boxes, or are you in retail stores now?
Yeah, so right now we do CSA, we do farmers markets, and then we do some online sales through the Iowa Food Hub up in Decorah. Mm-hmm. And then we have our own online store that we are just starting to get into and kind of getting the ball rolling on that. So,
Sorry, I'm curious to know, why do you go directly to customers for all of your sales? And how come you didn't go to the grocery retailer avenue first? I'm just curious to know that.
So, you know, grocery retailers, if you go directly to them, kind of the price point kind of plays into it, you know, doing wholesale prices, and we're not to the scale where we can really accommodate that quite yet. Mm-hmm. But this next year with our high tunnels, with the two more high tunnels we're putting up, we're exploring that option to do more wholesale, and, you know, maybe We can do more sales through the Food Hub. And they actually work with schools and other restaurants. So they're kind of like a, I think of it as like a logistics, like they can, you know, connect the dots together for us. So, you know, that's one option that we're exploring more into. But for like, you know, sending our product to like grocery stores, you know, we just don't have enough product at this time to do wholesale, or this past year we did it.
Did you have any challenges with getting your initial customer base going for your CSA boxes, you know, at the farmers markets? Were there any challenges there? I actually help out a lot of people starting at mom pop shop vertical farms. And they've been, they've been you know, doing pretty well with like getting their first few customers. But I'm just interested because yours is a bit bigger scale than what they've been running.
Yeah. So when we first started doing CSA, you know, we just had a handful of customers and, you know, kind of people that we knew. And it just kind of spread by word of mouth. And now we're doing a lot more advertising on like social media. And there's still a lot of word of mouth. So, you know, people are telling other people and, you know, that's pretty cool. So, you know, we've been kind of growing in that sense. So, you know, to get it started, you have to start somewhere. Like I was looking back at our first farmer's market, you know, several years ago, and, you know, we had one folding table with, you know, just a handful of radishes and a couple of other things. And now I feel like two or three tables, even this time of year at the winter farmer's market that we go to. So, you know, you got to start somewhere and kind of start learning, I guess, you know, figure out what works and what doesn't. And that's true for the CSA as well.
For your CSA, do you, and your online sales, do people come to pick up from you or do you go deliver to your customers or do they pick up at the farmer's market?
Yeah. So we have three options. We do home delivery. We do several drop sites in nearby towns. And then we do a farm pickup option too. So they're all priced differently. So we kind of have that flexibility that, you know, maybe someone doesn't want to pay for home delivery and they aren't too far from the farm. So they just pick up from the farm. And then we have drop sites too. You know, other local businesses, we drop the boxes off and then they just stop in those businesses and pick them up. So we pray about like a 50-mile radius from the farm that we serviced.
Okay.
For the fall, this fall CSA that we just wrapped up, we started using a new app called Grown By. It allows CSA members to customize their box. So if they don't like kale or they don't like beets or something, they can swap that item out.
Wow.
And put something else in, or they can just delete it. And, you know, if they don't get the full value of the box that we determine, it'll issue them an in-store credit. So they don't lose that value. And with Grown By, they can also purchase add-on items. So they can add on meat, eggs, maple syrup, honey, or just a bunch of other veggies. So they, you know, that's pretty cool too. So
right,
every single CSA box can be custom.
That's definitely cool. And because you guys also provide meat, eggs, honey, all those additional crops as well, right?
Yep.
Or does any of that come from your brother-in-law's farm across the street?
The beef does.
Okay.
The beef comes from his farm and then it goes to a locker where it's a USDA inspected facility. And then we have a trailer it's a food license and our mobile trailer with freezers in it. So that's where we store our beef and everything's frozen and prepackaged. So we've got steaks and roasts and hamburger and snack sticks. So, you know, we have that option that people can add on, you know, a couple ribeyes and maybe they can, you know, meal plan ahead and figure out this weekend, you know, have a cookout or something. So veggies, meat, eggs, I mean, just about everything you could think of.
Yeah, that's really cool. So since, you know, from getting started to where you are at today, what were some of the challenges that you've encountered And what were, you know, what was kind of the biggest category of challenges? Was it growing, finding your customers, getting the equipment installed? Like, maybe talk a bit about those kinds of things.
Yeah, for growing, you know, I think every grower faces challenges with pests and insects. And, you know, you have this beautiful crop, and then, you know, next day or two, you know, you come back and it's like, there's caterpillars all over. Oh no, wait, what do you do? Like, so, you know, that was a big learning curve for me, you know, just figure out like, what's going on? Why is my crop dying? It's not looking good. So, you know, that was a challenge to overcome. And, you know, and that challenge never goes away. It's just a matter of how you handle it. Mm-hmm. The other challenges, yeah, definitely the markets. Our first year at the farmers market in Dubuque that we go to, we were kind of at the end of a street, like a side street. And, you know, our sales weren't great. And we were coming home with a lot of product. And, you know, we were trying to decide, do we go back or, you know, what do we do? Mm-hmm. I ended up, you know, talking to the market manager and getting a spot on the main street.
Oh.
And I went back the next year and our sales were great.
Oh, wow.
And so like opening weekend, I came back with, you know, stacks of empty totes. I'm like, this is cool. Like, you know, it's just, I was not in the right location. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge too. You know, it's kind of a struggle. You have to learn what's working and what's not and figure out how to overcome it. The other kicker, you know, the big thing that we had our first year growing, we had a derecho in December. So a derecho, what we call, is like a large storm of straight line winds.
Okay.
Not a tornado, but it's just a, you know, large storm, high winds. So that came through our farm 2021 in December. And previous up to that, we had like sustained 50 to 60 mile per hour winds. And then that evening when the derecho came through, we had winds of excess of 75 miles per hour. And that took out two of our farmer's friend tunnels, the smaller caterpillar tunnels. And that was kind of devastating for us because we lost so much crops. And, you know, the market before Christmas is a bigger market for us.
Yeah.
You know, we just, you know, that was a hard hit. And we kind of had to make a decision at that point. Like, are we going to continue doing this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, are we going to rebuild? And we kind of put, you know, put a game plan together that we needed better structures because our farm is on top of a hill. So we always have wind. And, you know, if we have this wind event, there's going to be more wind events. So we need something that's going to withstand wind. So that's why another reason that we went with Harnois greenhouses, they can handle 100 mile per hour wind and a lot of snow. And they're just robust structures. So, you know, the challenges of finding, you know, robust structures for us, that was, you know, that was a hurdle too.
Mm-hmm. How did you find out about the grant?
When we started our farm, we were working with our FSA office. It's the USDA, the Farm Service Agency. And in that same office is the Natural Resource Conservation Office. So we were just kind of talking to them and kind of, you know, found out these different EQIP grants that are available and cost share programs. So we decided, you know, why not apply? It's not going to hurt anything. And it's not overly complicated to apply either. So we were pretty happy that we're on our second EQIP grant for high tunnels. And, you know, we're pretty pleased with it. The grant actually covers majority of the cost of the high tunnels. So that's pretty cool.
What percentage did it cover? 80?
They pay per square foot. So it depends on, you know, they just pay per square footage wise. So whatever your high tunnel is, you know, that's on you. Mm. You know, you just have to put a structure up that you say you're going to put up, and they come out and certify it, and then you get reimbursed.
Wow, that's so nice.
So for us, you know, it covers almost 100% of the high tunnels.
Wow.
For what they pay. Now, they don't pay for the extra bells and whistles. They don't pay for the automation or venting. It's just the structure itself. And you have to grow in the ground inside that structure.
Oh, you have to grow in the ground.
Yep.
So you guys, I know in our pre-call, you were talking about how you grow in the ground. Just to clarify, all the crops in the greenhouse that you're growing, they're all from the ground. You don't have garden beds or anything like that.
Yep. That's correct.
And it's year round you're able to produce that way within the high tunnels.
Sometimes, you know, if it gets real cold, the ground and the outer beds of the high tunnel will freeze because we've not put insulation barrier in the ground around mm-hmm. the high tunnels. That would be cool if I did, but so sometimes the ground around the outside will get cold or slightly frozen. Mm-hmm. So depending on what crops we have in, some can tolerate, some can't. But the ground in the middle of the high tunnels, it never freezes.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you think is the vision, you know, for future growth of Phelps Farm? You know, I know you mentioned putting up 2 new high tunnels currently this year. Do you want to get more high tunnels and, you know, get into grocery stores like we kind of talked about, or just keep building your CSA box? I mean, honestly, you could almost have a grocery store yourself with meat, eggs, and all the veggies and honey and whatnot.
Just about, you know, we thought about, you know, having a farm store at the farm, but we're so far out of town and down gravel roads. A lot of people just, you know, I don't think would venture out this far. Mm-hmm. We do have a little farm store in town that we run on weekends.
Oh, you have your own farm store in town.
Yeah, we rent a little storefront in Gothenburg, so we do that on weekends, and just it's like our own little farmer's market. You know, we have a good handful of locals and regulars that come in and buy from us, so that's pretty cool. But for the future, you know, we do want to expand our CSA and do more wholesale. I don't know if it would be through grocery stores, but schools, mm-hmm. restaurants, stuff like that. So another cool thing that we're doing is that we're putting a processing kitchen in. We received a RFSI grant through the Iowa Department of Agriculture, and it stands for Resilient Food System Infrastructure Program. So with that grant, we're building out a processing kitchen, so we will have the ability to wash, peel, slice, dice, freeze, or freeze-dry vegetables. So a way of preserving vegetables that not only that we grow, but we're looking at potentially buying vegetables from other local farmers in the area to bring in and process them and then be able to turn around and sell them as a diced frozen product that we can sell to schools and they can use it for soups or something, you know. So there's a lot of things that are still in the works. You know, we have to figure out our licensing and narrow down our products. So we almost have all of our equipment in place. Early spring next year, we'll be running some test batches of different things to figure out what works and, you know, figure out what people want. So kind of a testing markets. We have a lot of daikon radishes, so we're really curious about maybe slicing daikon radishes in our equipment or dicing them and figure out if we can make something out of them. You know, we have so many of them and they store so well. So that's kind of unique and different. So we always try to figure out a niche, you know, something that, you know, filling a void. And kind of focusing on that rather than, you know, just doing what everybody else is doing.
And so the slicing daikon radishes, I guess that would be, yeah, I don't think I've eaten many of those, but yummy. Would you say that like finding a niche and offering something new to people was fundamental to your guys' initial success? And, you know, getting your initial customer base?
Yeah. So one of the main things is, if you do get into like a niche or something, you know, you're growing a specific product, to try to have consistency, to always have it at market.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing is, you know, being consistent, you know, showing up every week with, you know, kale, lettuces, spinach. So that's probably the biggest challenge. One of the bigger challenges for us is, do you have that consistency? And that's not always easy with weather and bugs and everything else. So one of the things that we grow year round is actually celery. So I think we're going into the third or fourth year of growing celery nonstop year round. So a lot of people, you know, we kind of become known as the, you know, celery people at market. You know, we've always got it. You know, we've always got kale. We try to always have lettuce mix. Wintertime, we'll have spinach, stuff like that. So, yeah, trying to just, you know, fill that void that, you know, regrow things that people don't, you know, other people might not be able to find in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Your CSA boxes, are they weekly or monthly, you know, orders that people put in to sign up?
Yeah. So this coming year, we're doing, I think our spring box is every other week. Our summer boxes are weekly. And then fall is every other week. So we offer a spring, summer, and fall CSA. Okay. And then we also offer a winter farm membership. And that's exclusive just for past CSA members in the past year. So that's kind of a perk of being a CSA member. You can take advantage of our winter share. And that has fresh veggies, but also maybe some preserved things or stuff that we've made. You know, that's kind of unique and different. And last year was our kind of our first trial run of it. So this year we're using Grown By, so we can, offer a customized option. So yeah, you know, just trying to have a option available year round. There are other farmers that do CSAs, and you know, it's more seasonal, which is fine. But you know, we try to offer something that's, you know, we keep going because we're still growing, and you know, we still got stuff in the ground and, you know, things to offer. So why not?
How many people do you have signed up for your farm membership? Do you know what those numbers are? You don't have to share any details if you don't feel comfortable with that. But even like a range.
So last year, we probably about 30 CSA members for spring, another about 30 for summer, and then fall we had about 21, so it dipped down a little bit. This coming year we're hoping to increase that number, and with with more features and the ability to customize boxes or skip boxes, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a lot more options, and I think that might be more appealing to people. It's just a matter of us learning how to do the marketing of it. That's a challenge.
Okay.
So we're actually selling our CSA boxes right now. We have a promo code. You can get 10% off if you sign up for spring, summer, and fall for next season. So we're already selling next year's boxes. Mm-hmm. And then in the spring, we'll reopen that and, you know, maybe offer some other promotions.
Very, very interesting. I have so many more questions, but maybe I'll just follow up with you after the interview. Yes. So your story is definitely really interesting. It's nice to have someone on this podcast who's going, you know, directly to customers, CSA, farmers markets, because a lot of people that I find when they want to get into the greenhouse space, access to capital is a big barrier. And to get into the grocery stores and the retailer chains, like, you have to be, you know, just like you say, a certain size to have the volume to make it worth the investment. So for new people looking to get into the greenhouse sector, I think like listening to your experience will be very beneficial to them. And just, you know, thinking of ways to get like their first customers and whatnot. I know for sure in Manitoba, anyhow, we don't have a lot of these year-round growers who are, you know, kind of doing what you guys are doing. And, you know, we are a bit colder, but it is still very similar climate.
The one thing I would mention is that we invest quite heavily in education and learning new things. Mm-hmm. So if they're a new greenhouse grower, figure out your, you know, if you have a local university that offers like a service, you know, that can help. For us, we work with Iowa State University Extension. The person's name is Dan Filius. So he's been a huge help with us. He's a specialty in a horticulture crop specialist. So, you know, if I have a bug problem or I've, you know, something going on, for example, my celery, I had brown leaves. I sent him a picture. He actually came to the farm and, you know, whipped out his little microscope and figured out that I have mites going on. Oh. So, you know, kind of figure out a solution. So, you know, having someone like that in your toolbox is like, you know, a huge asset, and it's free, you know. So he also hosts a high tunnel conference. He just had one last week down in near Des Moines. So, Iowa State University Extension, a great resource. The other resource that we rely heavily on is the Market Gardener Masterclass. So that's from J.M. Fortier, and he focuses on field production and greenhouse production. And I believe he uses hardwall greenhouses now too. So that's pretty cool. Like, he, you know, you watch his videos or, you know, how he does things, and you can see the greenhouse like, oh, that looks just like mine. Like, that's pretty mm-hmm. cool. You know, and you can see how, you know, he's doing things. So that the class is a little spendy, but it has paid for itself 10 times over already, you know, just the amount of knowledge. And that's kind of like our Bible. So, you know, if something's not working, we'll go back and rewatch it and we'll figure out, oh, he updated this, you know, this is new. Like, oh, we can do that, you know. So, you know, just a constant, you know, learning new information that way. Mm-hmm. The other resource that we rely on is organization as a nonprofit here in Iowa called Practical Farmers of Iowa, or PFI. So they also have a lot of learning opportunities. They have grants, cost shares. They have a lot of different resources that, you know, can help someone getting started for, you know, management of business or land access. I mean, you name it. I mean, they can get you pointed in the right direction, at least. They have an annual conference coming up, I think, in January. So really awesome stuff. Very, very great organization. And then there's a Midwest Organic Vegetable Production Conference in Madison, Wisconsin. I think that's in January as well. I could be wrong, but that's also kind of hosted by like Iowa State Extension, Fair Share CSA, and a couple other organizations. So we went to that last year. Also very, very beneficial. We're going to go again this year probably. So, you know, just we take a lot of notes and, you know, constantly getting new ideas to maybe try something else on the farm or, you know, refine things on the farm, be more efficient and cost effective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's really good advice, you know, for new growers, is to really invest in your education, you know, from, and it sounds like you guys did a wide variety of education too. Like, you had some horticulture, some business planning, partnered with programs who could help you out with grants. So that's, yeah, really good advice to share. Just, you know, one last question for you. And I'm hoping that, you know, again, elaborate as much as you can on this question, because it is it's always our last question on these podcasts, but it's also, I think, one of the, you know, most inspiring one to leave with people. What is your proudest moment as a grower?
So we have two children. They're 5 and 6. And we bring them to the farm with us, and they're learning on how to grow, you know, seed starting and transplanting and growing vegetables. And yeah, like, we teaching them that you can grow food. And so, you know, that's probably the proudest moment as a grower and a parent. And our kids are our number one quality control analyst. So if they get a cherry tomato that's bad, they're going to tell you about it. So, you know, being able to grow veggies and then having them to be able to just, they can go pick, you know, all the cherry tomatoes they want. We don't get upset with them. You know, if they want to go pick some cucumbers and snack on them, they can, you know, pick cherry tomatoes right from the plant and eat them. I mean, so that's pretty cool. Like we, you know, we teach them how to grow food and they get to have some fun doing that too.
Oh, that's a really sweet one. Thanks for sharing. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for sharing your story about Phelps Farm,
Yes. Where
you guys started, where you came from, you know, where you're at today. I think this will be a really beneficial podcast for all those new greenhouse growers looking to get into this space, but maybe want to start a bit smaller and go the CSA route. I already know of, you know, a list of like 5 or 6 people that I'm going to recommend this to.
Yeah, definitely. And you can check out our website, PhelpsFarmsIowa.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well. So, you know, you can go see all the pictures and, you know, things that are happening on the farm. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, yes. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for agreeing to do the show.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Greenhouse Success Stories hosted by Trina Semenchuk. Thanks to our guests who make this all possible. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Arnois Greenhouse. To read the full show notes for each episode, which includes an episode summary, key takeaways, and guest resources mentioned, please visit greenhousesuccess.com. $680 million poured into precision ag last year. Autonomous weeding robots dominated, and John Deere made 2 acquisitions in 3 months. A food company, not an equipment maker, bought a robotics startup to protect its own supply chain. The deals are accelerating, the money is moving, and the winners are already separating from the pack. If you're investing, building, or buying in this space, you need the full picture before your competitors get it. The 2025 Precision Agriculture Intelligence Report from iGrowNews is now available. Get your copy today at iGrowNews.com/precision. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Arnois Greenhouses. Are you a commercial grower striving for consistency, higher yields, and year-round profitability? For over 60 years, Arnois Greenhouses has been designing, building, and installing advanced greenhouse and high tunnel systems across North America. Their commercial structures are engineered to maximize light with minimal steel using their exclusive oval tube design, improve climate control, and reduce disease risks, helping growers achieve healthier crops, better yields, and consistent performance season after season. What sets them apart? Arnois combines deep engineering expertise with a personalized, grower-first approach. With tens of thousands of installations worldwide, patented technologies, and a legacy of innovation, they're not just building greenhouses, they're building the future of agriculture. If you want a greenhouse manufacturer that can truly be there, from your first high tunnel to a fully automated turnkey solution tailored to your climate, crops, and business goals, whether you grow vegetables, ornamentals, berries, or nursery plants, visit arnoisgreenhouse.com. Let them help you bring predictability, efficiency, and scalability to your growing operation. Thanks to Arnois Greenhouses for supporting this show. Now let's get into today's episode.